restart from episode one. We're going to reboot.
Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode one. Season three, episode one. I don't know.
I don't think we have seasons.
No. Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 437. Stuff and things. Host here with
that
me.
That might be the worst
always...
title you've ever given these.
Yeah, so many now.
Yeah, David McBurney, Family Mastery. There was a point where you like named like three of them Sleepy until someone told you to stop.
Yeah, it's true. At this point, it's hard to come up with names, and I don't.
You really
care.
Should just call this one. It's hard to come up with names.
Yes, except I'm pretty sure I've used that already.
I'm sure you have.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer. You can just call me Joe if you want.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. And am I correct in saying I was at some point promoted to co-host without being officially informed?
That's correct.
You are in fact
co-host. I'm no longer podcast panelist Joey PP.
Yes. I think Tam is technically a host when he's available also.
And where's Guy Jim?
We have many hosts. I think he's figuring out his schedule, which means we may have another day shift at some point in the near future.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. Should be fine by me, because I hate Mondays. Just like Garfield.
Inside a head.
You love lasagna.
I do love lasagna.
Well, there you go.
Fireminer says he checked the comments for us, and there are none.
Thank you, Fireminer.
Okay.
No matter how many hosts we have, you're secretly a co-host just by dint of how much of our podcast relies on you.
Yeah. It's actually the it's not Q&A Quest. It's the real Fireminer show.
And nobody's gonna go to school. I should not sing that. That song is very grim.
No.
Well, it annoys me when I try to tell people it's called Q&A Quest and they just give me a blank look and I'm like, question and answer. We answer questions from gamers about video games.
I mean,
fun fact from 10 years ago, and the alternate title I pitched for which pitched to Wheels was Questing for Answers.
Yeah,
I kind of like that better now. Can
it's
we change?
Too clever by half. It's too clever by half.
Yeah.
The problem is Q&A Quest is a great title for people that have been hanging around RP Gamer for a long time and know that we've had a Q&A column forever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we have now outlasted every version of that column.
Yes.
Wow.
And like, I don't think anyone gets the reference anymore.
It doesn't mean shit no more.
No, so crap.
Well, and the other thing that's funny is when I told people, oh, I do YouTube videos, they're like, okay. I do Twitch streaming. What's that? And then, oh, well, I'm on a podcast. Oh, you're on a podcast? Like,
you
just
only
use the
talking to, are you only talking to old people, Joe?
Yeah, like
fuck?
My parents.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
My parents did not understand any of the things I've been trying to do on the internet for the past, 15 years or whatever. And then as soon as I said podcast, they're like, wait, we know that word. Oh, okay.
Oh God, have podcasts become for the olds? Are we gonna have to switch to what's the hip new thing now? We're gonna have to do TikTok videos, people.
Oh no.
Wheels, no. There is nothing that is more like aging millennial male coded than doing a podcast.
It's true. I blame Retronauts for getting me interested in doing this.
I blame my failed YouTube and Twitch careers for getting into podcasting.
That's not a career. That's a hobby, buddy.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And that's what it should be.
No, you are absolutely right. And I think to myself, what if you actually did succeed? It's like, well, that would be awful because then I'd have like 1,000 people badgering me while I'm trying to play games.
And you'd probably have to play the same game over and over again.
And I still wouldn't make any money.
and become one of those people that's like, this is a dead game. This is a dead game because this is my job and I've devoured all the content possible.
Well, see, in my definition, I think Marvel Rivals is a dead game because it's hit the point where too many people have gotten way too good at it and I can't have fun anymore.
I think we need a definition for dead game because it sounds like the opposite of a dead game.
I know. It's a dead game in my brain.
But I hear that about Destiny all the time, and I go on and have no trouble finding people to like group up with, like in a quick time span. It's like there's a lot of content in this game, and most people cannot have possibly played all of it. Stop listening to the people whose job it is to play the game. End rant.
Okay. You could have kept going.
I can keep going. Like
you don't have to.
It's true with so many games. Like Overwatch has been a dead game forever, and I'm pretty sure I have quicker load times than I did when it was a live game.
I don't know. There was a point in time where I tried to get back into it, and I swear to you, it made me wait 8 minutes to get into a match, and then it.
There was a time for that. It's better now.
Okay.
And, like they brought back a 6-on-6 mode with no roll queues, so you can have teams of like whatever, which is a blessing and a curse. But it's more like Classic Overwatch. And also they fixed the name finally. They stopped fucking calling it Overwatch 2.
I was like, it wasn't a sequel. What are you doing?
It wasn't. It was the same game. It was just a big update. And it confused everyone. Guys, I saw so many people like wring their hands that, oh, they're like deleting the game I have that I purchased. And it's like, it's the same fucking game. Your game is the same fucking game. Oh, I hate the internet so much. Why am I on the internet?
Don't know.
Why is this my entire job?
Ugh.
So, I told you about the time that it might have been the Overwatch beta or maybe when it first came out. I don't remember, but I was in a match once where there were 3 Bastions and 2 Mercies guarding the objective, and we couldn't get anywhere near it.
That must have been in the beta. I don't remember. Or some weird alternate mode. Because I don't remember any time where you could have multiple people playing the same character.
Yeah, it happened. Might have been a beta test or something. I don't remember. Yeah. So I was doing 2 things yesterday and today. So I was at my parents' house yesterday for dinner. So in between that and Shenanigans, I was working on something. So for a while, my NES mini console was acting up. It kept shutting itself off.
Ooh.
And they've been known to do that at certain points. And I have it hacked with Hackchi. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's like I've had instances with all the mini consoles where you just have to redo the hack to get it to stop glitching. So I remove Hackchi, and then the thing would not boot at all. So it would turn on and just wouldn't make it to the main menu. It would just say shutting down. I'm like, well, that's weird. That made it worse. So the thing is, the new version of Hackchi, it puts like a backup kernel onto a special place on the internal drive. But I'm like, but okay, obviously that must have gotten corrupted. That's what it keeps restoring it from. So I had to get an old version of Hackchi in order to, in the old version, they let you manually just pick the file. So I was able to get the stock kernel and I was able to manually get it to reinstall through an old version of Hackchi. And so once I got it back into its original working state, because the factory reset had also failed as it was just glitched and you couldn't even factory reset it. So I got it back to the original 30 games and I'm like, okay, it appears to be working. Like what was happening too sometimes is when, if I went to go touch the power button, it might just shut itself off. I'm like, well, that's weird. So I thought I might have a software problem. I might have a hardware problem. I might have both. But basically, once I got it in a working state, I'm like, okay, good. You know, I don't have to throw it out. But then I found out that you can get the kernel for the Super Nintendo mini console, and there's a way you can install that through RetroArch, so it goes into that menu instead. So yes, I've effectively converted my NES mini console into a Super NES mini console, and I even have a Super Nintendo controller for it. And I'm like, oh, this is fun. So it's that menu and music and those 20 or 21 stock games. So I was playing some Mega Man X today and just had the music playing while I was doing other things. And I'm like, wow, so not only did I fix it and it's not glitching anymore. I had it on for a long time. It didn't shut off. I was fiddling with the power button and the power cable, and it appears to be secure and nothing, it's not shutting off. But so not only did I do that, but I made it better. And I did learn that there's a lot of Super Nintendo ROMs that do not run off of that built-in emulator, but that's fine. You can still just use a RetroArch core instead. Also found out that a lot of my old Super Nintendo ROMs that I acquired, I don't know, 20 years ago, a lot of them are corrupted and not in a format that RetroArch likes. So I had to reacquire some Super Nintendo games. But that was fun to play around with today.
What are you playing on there that you can't just play on Nintendo Online?
I can't explain it, man. Like,
okay.
I don't need I don't need any of these mini consoles anymore. They're just fun. I just think they're neat. So,
use the Turbo Mini because it has things that are like hard to play in other official formats.
Oh yeah, that one I understand.
I wanted that one, but that one like very limited run, came out during the pandemic, and it's like $200-$300 on eBay. Jeez. So no, not buying that. And my Genesis Mini still works, and I use that sometimes. But as a matter of fact, I actually have all my RetroArch cores and all my various ROMs all set up on Steam Deck with retro achievements, and I've been playing that.
There is little that is more evil in my soul than retro achievements.
Okay. Fair enough. So then my co-host here, Wheels, is supposed to come over tomorrow, and I'm trying to sell the PS1 mini console and the Neo Geo Arcade Stick Pro because I barely use them, and I don't need them because I did get all those ROMs working on other systems with better emulation and controls and stuff. So yeah, so I was almost late for the podcast because I was in the middle of testing those two devices with various wires and making sure I don't accidentally give away a perfectly good ultra-high-speed HDMI cable, you know. So the stores that accept these kind of trade-ins, that you know, they can have the crappy HDMI cables. Not going to give away a good one. So, and I've decided to reacquire my old PS3 because I didn't realize our buddy Wheels still had it and that it still worked. And it has a nice Prinny Squad sticker on it because I love Disgaea. And it had a 720 gigabyte hard drive installed that I put in there myself. So kind of funny thing is he was trying to sell the Vita TV. I was thinking about buying that. I decided not to. But to sweeten the deal, he had said, oh, I'll throw in this PS3 that definitely didn't used to be yours. And I'm like, wait, what? PS3?
That's not what I said at all.
I know. I was like, wait a minute. The Prinny Squad PS3, you still have that? And he's like, no, wait, typo. I meant to say PS3 controller. It's like, I was like, okay, but I want that though. I don't want the Vita TV. I want that PS3 back. I want that.
Yeah, so I had to go and find another PS3 so that I could sell you your PS3.
Well, you didn't have to.
Yeah, and the one I got was the Super Slim. Is that the last model they made?
The last model.
It's got a weird slide open disk drive, which I kind of like.
Oh, well, good, because I don't want that one. Good. I want the
heavier slot CD slot Blu-ray drive that'll totally not break at some point.
I don't think it will.
I'll take the one with fewer moving parts.
Okay. That's fine. So, yeah, mine was a regular slim, so you just got yourself a super slim. Okay. That's cool. But I wouldn't want to get the original fat model because Yeah.
Those are not reliable.
No, those are very old, and there were people, I guess there were people trying to play.
At the time.
No, so I remember reading online, somebody said that they tried to play The Last of Us on the original PS3 model, and it like overheated and shut off and died or something, because it couldn't handle the newer graphics, or I don't know, the old chip was bigger and hotter or something.
I mean, I played through The Last of Us on my OG model.
Oh, all right.
So then maybe that one, your console was probably dying.
Yeah, could be.
A lot of early PS3s were.
Yeah, that's what happened to mine. It right out just after the warranty expired, it died. And then I bought the slim model, and it was like, oh, well, this has a bigger hard drive anyways. This is great. I feel like this is an upgrade. I'm happy with this. So.
Okay, I'm going to briefly interrupt our musings to catch some of Fireminer's questions. This is less a question and more a comment, but some people are trying to remake Phantasy Star Zero by themselves. Phantasy Star fans, man. I'm kind of baffled by that because why? I don't, like I've never, I've met people who enjoyed Phantasy Star Zero. I've never met anyone who was, like, particularly in love with Phantasy Star Zero.
I didn't play any Phantasy Stars, so I'm not equipped to
go back and
this.
Play Phantasy Star 4.
Yeah, okay. It's an all-time classic.
I have that installed on my Genesis mini console.
Yeah, like Zero was the DS one. It's like okay. I've never been in love with like Phantasy Star, the like PSO style action RPG. I didn't play PSO when it was new. I did go back and play Blue Burst like 10 years ago. And I'm going to be honest, that's a dog water action RPG. Like, it is only rescued by the fact that you can play it with other people.
Yeah.
If you like, playing that by yourself is one of the most, like, I would not consign my worst enemy to that fate. It's very bad. And all of its progeny, it's just like, this feels like minimum viable product action RPG. And I don't understand the appeal. I wish they would make just an actual Phantasy Star again. But that ship failed.
Sega.
But, okay.
I mean, hey, Phantasy Star Online 2. What the hell is the current one called? It's just Phantasy Star Online 2?
It's 2, but it's like new something now. Or other. New front. Because like, there's like a stealth Phantasy Star Online 3 that was built in, that was patched into it.
So confusing.
Let's see. Out of the Discord question list, took out the questions that have been answered. Appreciate that. A few years ago, I brought up the idea that nostalgia really didn't have a rhyme or reason, using Blockbuster nostalgia as an example. The thing is that all the good qualities people think Blockbuster had, mom and pop video rentals actually had them. Mm-hmm. You know, the places that Blockbuster destroyed. The thing is, a lot of us. So I'm gonna be honest, as someone who had a few mom and pop video shops, they were extraordinarily hit and miss. Yeah. And I think that that's an element of nostalgia that's forgotten.
Yes.
Like, Blockbusters were up and down. Like, there were good Blockbusters and bad Blockbusters. But it is worthy of note that a lot of, like, there were degrees of how much variance you could get between Blockbusters, for good and for ill. There was no way to get, like that one perfect Blockbuster. But at the same time, like, there were some mom and pop stores that were just like that ultimately went out of business due to chains encroaching, but that like they were kind of bad. Like, they had a bad selection, they charged more for like less time. Like, I definitely had some good mom and pop ones in my area, but the simple majority of them, like out of the like four or so that I patronized at various points during my childhood, three or four of them were at best essentially comparable to a Blockbuster, and several of them were significantly worse.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it goes. Like, that is the convenience of knowing that what you're going to get is one of the things that drives people to change for good and ill. Mm-hmm. And
consistency.
A lot of people will trade that the chance to find that diamond in the rough for the consistency of, well, at least I know what I'm getting. Yeah.
It would have been better if there were more chains than Blockbuster instead of Blockbuster and mom and pop stores.
Right.
In my neck of the woods, there was also Hollywood Video.
Hollywood Video was good.
No one moves them out like Tommy Case. Tommy Case.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's a regional chain.
Yeah, I just remember the commercial jingle. I never went there. I was going to say, so when I was a kid, I grew up in a small town, and there were two mom and pop video stores. Or maybe at one point there might have been three, but sometimes you would have to go to two or three of these places to find the one specific movie or game you wanted. So to your point, more limited selection. And then they would charge you, I don't know, however much money just for a 2 or 3 day rental. So typically, like on a Friday afternoon after school, my mom would take me to one of them. You'd pick out a game. That's what you'd play over the weekend. Sometimes you got shit. It just happens. Sometimes you get something so bad that you're like, I guess I'll just go play Super Mario Brothers some more, you know? And you would say, Mom, can we go back and get a different one? No, Joseph. You know, Mom, this place doesn't have the game I want. Can we go to a different one? No, just pick something they have here. We're not going to another store. That sort of thing. So we had ended up moving to another town, and I remember when Blockbuster came to that town, and it was a nice store. I remember going in there and I was blown away with, like, there were games that I would have found at any of the other places. It just, they had such a huge selection. Although there were instances where if there was an extremely popular game, they would say, oh, we had like 5 copies. They're all rented out right now. And there was a time where you would get a game for like 5 days for like $5 or something. So yeah. It's pretty cool. When they kind of were going out of business, you could go in there and, like, I got some super cheap GameCube games just before they like started to go under. So that was good.
Yeah, I scavenged so many PS2 games from dying Hollywood Videos and Blockbusters. That's the real nostalgia. Yeah, I remember one. I can't remember what I was purchasing, but like when they were looking in the case, they were like, "Well, for some reason, this first disc of the Wild Arms anime DVD is also in this case." And I was like, well, it's not supposed to be like that. This game did not come with that. And they said, well, either you take it or I'm throwing it away.
Wow.
Okay.
But why would throw it away?
Because they were closing down.
Okay. But he didn't want to keep it for himself.
He didn't want to keep like the first 2 episodes of the Wild Arms anime. This random, like, this random minimum wage employee who was about to lose his job. No, I don't think he did.
Okay, fair enough.
But that's actually probably not the weirdest interaction I've ever had while purchasing a video game. I must have told this at some point over the life of the podcast, but I'm going to bring it up again because it's incredibly funny. Our PS1 broke, as most PS1s did at some point or another. We took it to a local game shop for repair. And when I got there, I'm waiting to pick up the PS1, and the guy in front of us is arguing with the clerk. Like, arguing like, I demand that you take this back. And the clerk is like, you bought this yesterday. I told you that we wouldn't take it back. And like, you can trade it in, and this is what it's worth. And the guy, in an attempt to do some sort of hard sell, I guess, is like, either you give me my money back, or I'm giving it to the person behind me in line. And
what?
The guy, I called him on it. And so I like, the guy turns around, shoves into my hands an old NBA game and a PS1 helicopter game, and storms out of the store. He did not get his money back.
So what did you do with this gift? Question mark.
Back at home. I wasn't gonna I heard what they quoted to him. It wasn't worth it. So it's like, yeah, sure. I guess that's mine now.
Nice.
But yeah, those are my favorite of the of my in-store like weird experiences. Let's see. How much does nostalgia, especially secondhand nostalgia, rely on a widespread and uniform experience? I mean, it's extremely important. Like secondhand nostalgia in particular, like you get Wheels, how long is this cutscene? I'm sorry, you've been watching soccer cutscenes for like hours, it feels like.
It's not been hours.
It just feels like it. Okay.
Also, we call it football. It's the footy.
So Wheels, I'm gonna do one of my traditional rants, and I want you to know that I hate you, but it's not for this reason.
Okay.
I'm
gonna put down my controller.
So
I take this
bunch
in.
A bunch of places have multiple games that are called football. Mm. So many places. And in those places, association football becomes soccer.
Mm.
I'm going to put this down for you. Soccer is not an American term, and you can tell because that is not how we usually slangily abbreviate things. Soccer is a British term.
Oh, I know.
Playing a soccer. Some association football, some soccer. But yeah, we're not the only ones guilty of that. Plenty of places have their own football. And soccer becomes an easy way to determine, oh, are we talking like international football? Because association football doesn't mean anything. And as it turns out, soccer and rugby originate from the same game. And American football is in fact a rugby variant.
Mm.
So it is in fact a football. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh God, what the fuck is going on?
But yes, for secondhand nostalgia to spread, there has to be a bunch of people telling you the same stories.
But if you firmly embrace football in your heart, the type of battle might even change.
So it's just the new Inazuma 11.
Yes.
How much of this was generated by a slot machine?
I'm guessing none, because this was developed. This took forever to develop.
But I think who knows. Everything I've heard is that at least some of they were definitely generating some player names, but
I wouldn't doubt that.
Well, let's see. How much does it rely on being able to monetize it? Like, uniformity is required for monetization on a corporate scale. That's inescapable. Is there any nostalgia for the adult section of a video store? Only secondhand nostalgia. Everyone who ever walked into a video store for the specific reason to purchase a rent a pornographic film was doing their best to never be seen doing it.
Yeah. I was too young to be able to do that. I'm not sure that I would have. But when I was 17, I got a job at a Saturday matinee, which later became an FYE Games. It was the same corporation that owned FYE. And we called it the Benno Porno. And it was just in the corner of the store, there was this one shelf with those types of movies. And I never peruse them, but I do remember an instance where a classmate came in. He had just turned 18 and he was buying his first porno, and I'm like, okay, like I didn't judge him, you know.
I get to find out your taste, buddy.
Exactly. It's like, all right, I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, I'll be discreet, you know, you're a customer, I'm doing my job, but okay.
I think the best thing that ever came out of those kinds of I think the single best thing to come out of the ancient rental store porno section is the King of the Hill episode where Hank has to watch an indescribable amount of pornography to prove that he did not previously rent pornography.
Oh, good Hank. Good old Hank.
Not to be confused with the other character, good Hank.
Yeah, it was all softcore stuff anyways, so.
Let's see. Did you ever peek past the curtain? No, there were not, like, none of the, there was no porno at the mom and pop stores that were near me. Like, that did not exist.
Yeah.
Let's see. Or remember how all the people bemoaning the modern McDonald's buildings aren't as colorful as they were in the 90s. They're correct, but it's a strange thing to complain about when the corporate attitude of McDonald's towards their own foods, at least in the U.S., hasn't changed since the 90s. Our food is slop, take it or leave it. Yeah, no, that's people that are missing being eight. Like, the inside of a McDonald's, like, is mostly, like, has always been kind of a benign occurrence. Once upon a time, there were play places there, but those were horrible places to begin with. But yeah, like if you're like, oh, I miss when this, McDonald's was colorful, like you miss 90s aesthetics and you miss being eight. Like those two things have combined in your mind in an unhealthy fashion.
Yeah, I always thought McDonald's was ugly as shit.
And it still is.
It still is. Do you ever go to a Roy Rogers?
Never even seen one.
Yes.
Yeah, it was all like Western themed and they had pretty good burgers.
This is like, so yeah, I guess there was an actual Roy Rogers, and this is just making me think that you guys were going to the like less famous version of a Kenny Rogers Roasters.
Maybe. It was in Waterbury. I don't know. Who knows? There was a lot of weird stuff in Waterbury.
You ever been to a Kenny Rogers Roasters?
No.
Guess what? Those still exist for some reason.
Why? We used to have a Howard Johnson's, and then it got turned into just a regular cafe, but it was awful. My friend loved to eat there, but their food was terrible. Yeah.
Wheels, I need to addend that because you're going to be more confused. After closing all of its U.S. operations and a series of ownership changes, Kenny Rogers Roasters operates principally in Asia as part of Malaysian conglomerate Berjaya Corporation.
What?
So, if you want to go to a Kenny Rogers Roasters, you probably need to, like, take a trip to Malaysia at this point. This is like when I found out that the official, that an official tie-in soda to long forgotten, like, former fixture of newspaper comics, Little Abner, is currently only sold in, like, let me get the exact number, countries. Distributed largely in Asian markets, Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, Cambodia, and Bangladesh. The can still comes with a decorated with a vintage Little Abner drawing. So, anyone want to go to Brunei to get some soda?
No.
No.
I love when, like, brands that had some cachet get exported, and, like, after a while, the places they were exported to were the only places that still care. Let's see. Only the complaints about GameStop becoming less popular when their stores started focusing more on general nerdy tchotchkes are legit. Like, GameStop has always been the lowest common denominator. It isn't that different from a Hot Topic or a strip mall. If you think about it, you think you're a real gamer, go to the retro store where you can find a Jaguar. There's some really neat retro stores around where I live.
I mean, I agree on the one hand, Fireminer. On the other hand, I go into those retro stores all the time, and there's also the basic common denominator going in there all the time as well, just like getting 360 games.
I enjoy going into the places I could say that would dox where I live.
Oh yeah.
Like, I was walking by one and it's like, oh, this place is really nice and it has like games and music and movies on like Laserdisc and shit, and I look at it and it's like, well, there's only one of these, and it was established in like 1972. So, I think I will not name it by name.
Yeah, we've got so where Wheels and I live, I'm not gonna go get in too much detail, but you know, so there's GameStop, and then there was another place that's like way more ghetto than GameStop even is. Like, they still buy and sell DVDs and stuff like that.
No, they stopped doing that.
They did? Okay. Yeah. But then there's a more upscale used game store that also has like magic cards and action figures and stuff. And actually half the stuff in there used to be mine. I don't know. I haven't been in there in years, but
okay. Well, I'm going to give you some updates here. Okay.
Okay.
Number one, they all sell magic cards now. Even GameStop. Oh.
Okay.
Stop games.
Number two, they all sell Pokemon cards.
Okay.
Obviously.
As one does.
Yes. That's it. That's
if you're going to sell magic cards in a video game store, you're going to sell Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
I was always an electronics boutique guy before they fucking got eaten.
I don't like the one near me. They took my reserves for a bunch of games that never came out. I had to go.
Oh, hell yeah. Back. Which game? StarCraft Ghost?
No, it was like Mac games. They would take my reserves and they never got any of those in their store. And it's like, what the fuck are you taking my money for?
You know, it's a nice interest free loan.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a baffling. It's one of those things, like, you can never go home again because the past is lost to us. Speaking of Inazuma 11, the recent Level 5 showcase showed a Detective Pikachu-style Yo-Kai Watch game that uses AI-generated animations in the trailer, and Level 5 has already used AI in generating character concepts for Inazuma 11.
I don't think there's any game in that trailer.
Oh, I don't think so either, but I don't trust the game to whatever comes out the other end to not have some like just plop in it. Let's see. A lot of game and anime studios have been using AI but don't tell anyone because they fear the backlash. An anime that just aired the season used its AI in its intro and the studio had to apologize and redid the animations for real. I think things are just going to get worse quietly like this. I think that we're probably at the point where we're starting to see things break down for this. Just by dint of the fact that the companies that got in fast are starting to run out of money because this is an incredibly energy intensive thing. There's a big old energy shock going on right now. So there's a lot of, like, at least in the US, like, you look at something like OpenAI and it's like, oh, you're making a lot of moves that make it look like something is like very wrong with your cash flow. Immediately shooting any other product in the head that wasn't ChatGPT, like even things that theoretically shouldn't cost that much money, like their weird like porno ChatGPT they were going to sell, like all of that was immediately killed. And they're trying to juice their IPO, which would imply that it's like, oh, we just need money. We need lots of money. They seem to have reneged on a bunch of data centers and a bunch of deals to purchase RAM. Like, there's a lot of indications that it's like, oh, investors want to cash out, and you don't have the money to let them cash out.
Oh, that's not good.
So, yeah, I think we're starting to see at least some of the U.S. Ones, like the walls start to close in on them for a multitude of reasons. And ultimately what ends up happening is the only way to get around that is to start charging, like, you know, orders of magnitude more than they currently do. for the level of service they currently provide. Like, there's just no way around that because of how much it costs for every single generation. Like, and you put that together, and then like the cost, like the theoretical reason you do this is, well, we want to make it cheaper. We want to do things fast and cheap. And it's like, well, this will, if it somehow spits out exactly what you're looking for, if you're willing to take whatever it first spits out, it will be fast. It won't be cheap. And every time that it doesn't spit out what you wanted, like, you don't have a lot of good ways to edit the existing output without a human anyway. And, you know, every attempt to regenerate the output is, you know, doubling, tripling, quadrupling your cost, because, you know, you're just paying all of that. You're paying all those, all that money that you turned into the right to use tokens, which turned into the right to, you know, to get this generation. Like, all of that, just the money doesn't make sense eventually. And I think that's ultimately what's going to end up happening. As long as they can get it for cheap, yes, the answer is always going to be pretend that you were just experimenting with it and that you're really sorry that some of it ended up into the release, and then edit out whatever someone pointed out was like slop. And like that is already the playbook. And we've seen that if people already like the product, they end up pretty forgiving about this. Like your
Expedition 33.
Yeah, your Expedition 33s, your Arc Raiders, like that kind of thing. Like these, like whatever fan base exists for Crimson Desert, like all of these things together have had the same, like the playbook is written and it's known, and you're gonna keep seeing it until such time as it is no longer financially reasonable to keep keep doing this. Also, I'm gonna briefly comment on the Inazuma 11 of it all that you're showing me. I'm like, did that kid just like run and take a pipe to the head to avoid someone else getting their legs broken?
Yes. To some random, like, stranger.
The real like move here would have been to like have your main character here suffer some sort of long term debilitating head injury, because that's probably what should have just happened.
Mm. He's going to be okay though, because he's going to believe in the heart of the football.
I don't think footballs have hearts.
Yeah, I just remember, I don't remember exactly when this happened, but there was a point where I thought, oh, Sam Altman is basically just male Elizabeth Holmes, you know?
Much to consider.
Not far off.
Yeah, I think we're on, like, second news report of someone attempting to destroy his home. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't condone that, I get it.
I don't condone it, but I do think it's funny to watch the news.
Yeah.
I can't recall if this is actually a real one, but it is often attributed to Mark Twain. I've never wished death on someone, but I've read some obituaries with distinct pleasure. But yeah, like, I do wonder if at some point, creditors end up being the ones that are breaking his doors down. Let's see. Do you know the Vocaloid/Hatsune Miku live shows used to show holograms because they want to do more shows at different places? Setting up hologram stages is pretty complicated. Phased out the holograms and started using normal screens. I wonder if it's the same case everywhere else, that we don't see holograms as common as we used to 10 years ago. It's one of those things that, like, it could only work while it was novel. Once people like got used to seeing holograms, it was just sort of like, oh, well, this is expensive and it's not a draw. People are just as happy seeing someone on a screen, or like you could generate like footage of a concert, really anything other than like making a hologram, which is the most expensive version of doing that. Let's see. You know, reading through Hideki Kamiya's tweets, and I get the sense that too many annoying people put this man on a pedestal. Game directors are artists, but there is a spectrum from being a technician to being an auteur. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, also reading through someone's Twitter timeline is going to give you the most irritating version of themselves.
Yeah.
As someone whose Twitter timeline and or Blue Sky timeline is utterly insufferable to actually try to read. Like, because you're ultimately getting someone's least considered thoughts being fired off in rapid succession.
Yeah. I try to post fun things and just try to have fun. But I've often made the mistake of taking myself way too seriously on those sites and comparing myself to what everyone else was doing. It's like, no, just try to have fun.
I just post the occasional shit post. I had one that was funny to me today because it was just an image of... So I was looking for like, oh, what kinds of like Akira Kurosawa films can I get on Blu-ray? And Amazon was like, well, the generic alternative is a 10-film X-Men collection. I'm genuinely like algorithmically puzzled by this. In what sense is... there's such a thing as a generic alternative to a film? That doesn't make any sense. How did X-Men end up being what you selected for an Akira Kurosawa collection? I just have a couple questions. I just have a couple of questions. But yeah, as mentioned, someone's like... social media timeline is inevitably going to produce the most annoying version of themselves. And that includes me.
I posted some nice screenshots from Pokemon Pokepia.
Pokemon.
Oh, and for some reason I'm currently playing the Super Nintendo version of Bust a Move, and it's fine.
That's the most. There are a million versions of Bust a Move, and while there are differences between them, they're probably not big enough to care.
Yeah.
You should have to listen to the song Bust a Move while playing Bust a Move.
Don't just stand there, Bust a Move.
See, this man understands.
And for some reason, I never installed the X gonna give it to you mod in Resident Evil 2 Remake. And I don't know why I never did
that. Still time. There's still time.
You still can. What's stopping you?
Is there a thing that is an extremely curated Twitter or Facebook timeline that is also personal? No. Like you said, people don't air their best insight on social media. They save it for their book or Substack or whatever. Speaking of which, someone from Namco Bandai recently complained that because some games, like fighting games, run their services for so long, a lot of game devs are so specialized in one specific type of game instead of being able to do everything like in the old days. I mean, like, the complexity of modern development, like, selects for that. It's not even, like, yes, some of it is just, like, them running for so long, but some of it is just, like, you know, when games became more complex and they had like more complex effects and more complex systems, you needed more individually skilled, like, well, this is an event, like this is an event programmer, an effects programmer, like a systems programmer, like all of those like become teams of people who specialize specifically, you know, artists, like, you know, not just like 2D or 3D, but also like good at modeling specific kinds of things and, you know, like some poor soul who spends like months and months like making sure everyone's hair looks right, like that kind of thing. Like all that is kind of built into the AAA pipeline because of what it's selected for. And ultimately why that probably will end up being unsustainable for a lot of reasons. But you know, it's like them running for like a million years, like if we're talking about like the way that fighting games will have like 6 or 7 years, like 6 or 7 years of updates is honestly like not that far from how it used to be. It's just like, you know, those updates are maybe less, you know, like how long was Street Fighter 4 running? Like realistically, it was essentially like 09 to like 2014.
Yeah.
Like that's just kind of become the way of it. If you want the like all timer number of like updates, Guilty Gear XX might be the winner, depending upon what you're willing to count. Like, are we counting like Judgment, Isuka, or some of these other weird ones? Like, do these count? Who knows? Who can say? Like, X2 Sharp Reload, X2 Slash, X2 Accent Core, X2 Accent Core Plus, X2 Accent Core Plus R, and like I mentioned, there's like Isuka and Judgment, which I think are both built on X2's bones. So it's one of those things that's like, yeah, we've been, in terms of how long these get supported, we've been doing this since ever since. It's just the nature of like big budget development in this day and age, like forces the more people you're throwing at a project, the less you're probably going to need a generalist. There's no such thing as a generalist in a team of 500.
Yeah. Now I was thinking about this the other day because we had talked about fighting games on our last episode, I think. And Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat were not. No, we talked about different things, but yeah, I was thinking about how, like, so Guilty Gear Strive just released a big version 2.0 update. They're on Season 5. All the season passes were on sale, so I now have all the characters, and I guess they added, like, each character, I think, gets three different paths for arcade mode, so it's not just that one path where you'd fight Nagaryuki, whatever his name is, at the end. Yeah. So, but what I was thinking about is, you know, when I was growing up, of course, there were, you know, six different versions of Street Fighter 2. And, you know, so on the one hand, it was annoying to have to buy a new game every year, and that could be expensive, but you actually ended up with a whole collection of games, right? So sometimes I get annoyed when these games put out these, like, mandatory updates. I understand why they do that, you know, to balance out the multiplayer and the PvP and all that. But like, I guess I just like the fact that I can still play like Street Fighter Alpha 2. I'm not forced to play Alpha 3, you know. I like that I can still go back and play Blaze Blue, Calamity Trigger. Not sure why I'd want to, but again, it's, you know, I bought
available to you.
Right. I bought all the Blaze Blue games as they were coming out. And I mean, I can't remember all of the subtle differences, but I know just in one game, you know, Ragna had this downward axe kick, and then the next game they took it out. And it's like, huh. And then Noelle had a move in one game, but not in another, or they changed the trajectory of one of her drive attacks where she, you know, hops up in the air and comes back down. But yeah, so there's something to be said for both approaches, I suppose. Just, there's the modern day philosophy of, okay, now that Guilty Gear Strive has been updated to 2.0 and I have a digital copy, that's it. I can't go back and play vanilla Guilty Gear Strive. Again, not sure why I'd want to, not sure what benefit there might be to that, but
It is a shame that, like, version select does not exist in Street Fighter 5 and 6, for example. Like, that was available in Ultra Street Fighter 4. You could select to use each version of a character, but they've not done that for their recent ones, and it's a shame.
Yeah, and I was playing Hyper Street Fighter 2 because I finally got that first Capcom collection. It was $15. It was the one with all the Darkstalkers games, which we can play in Shenanigans if you guys want, by the way. But yeah, I was playing Hyper Street Fighter 2, and I'm like, okay, I like that it lets me pick, you know, any version of these characters. Unfortunately, yeah, obviously you can't, it doesn't let you play the original Street Fighter 2 versions of the bosses because they weren't playable. You can't pick Cammy, Fei Long, DJ, or T-Hawk if you pick an older version of the game. But believe it or not, I picked like original Ryu. And it's like, I didn't realize he can like stun somebody in two fireballs. And then you just walk over and throw them and like, and three quarters of their health are already gone. It's like, oh, that's kind of neat. He's actually not super weak or anything. And in the case of Guile, I can't do his stupid super combo anyways. So it doesn't matter which version of him I pick.
So, super combo finish.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about it. Like, yeah, I like being able to go back and play older versions of the game and just to try to see what the differences might be. Yeah, and I understand why. And yeah, we were talking about Tekken, I think, 2 weeks ago. And so Tekken 8, you said that in the newest season, they made huge fundamental changes to the gameplay that some people are not happy about. And that's exactly what I'm kind of referring to. And I've complained about it before, so not to sound like a broken record, but yeah, it does annoy me sometimes when games get these huge mandatory updates that change things. So, okay, I'm remembering where this all came from. It's Diablo 4 has a new expansion coming out soon. And I installed the game. I thought, well, maybe I want to get back into this. Maybe not. Let's see. It's like, well, gee, I have to download a 140 gigabyte file. And I play for about an hour. And I'm like, okay, no, I don't need to get back into this. I don't need to pay $40 for another expansion. And where I got on this whole train of thought was just the fact that I liked Diablo 4's initial character progression and difficulty system. And it was completely reworked when the first expansion came out to be closer to Diablo 3, and I didn't care for that. Like, I thought the original system was closer to Diablo 2. I liked that. The newer system is closer to Diablo 3. I don't like it as much. And it was frustrating when my level 100 characters were dropped to level 50, and I was told, oh, well, now you got to get them to 60, and we're throwing in Paragon levels. And it's like, my Paragon level is like 200, and it's like, oh, well, you can go up to 300, you can go up to 400, you can go up to Torment 6, Torment 7, whatever. And I'm like, I don't want to. Like, I beat your stupid game with the stupid story. I did some of the post-game. The end-game stuff is tedious and boring and stupid. And, like, why would I want to do more of that? I think I got what I wanted out of this silly game. I think I can move on with my life. You know, but I, again, I preferred the original progression system, and I always felt like I got robbed, you know, like they took away some of my progression, and it's like, I don't want to play this anymore. That's all.
Okay. So here's some quick ones. Wasn't there a PS2 game called Rogue Heart Legacy? I assume you're referring to Rogue Heart Dungeon, which seems to have been Compile Heart's roguelike for the PS2 from 2007. That was billed as a successor to the original Rogue. I feel like a lot of pseudo-modern roguelikes kind of like try to pull that. How many people even know about the original Rogue besides the nerds on two sides of the Pacific Ocean? I would suspect that, like, if you're dealing in roguelike fans, you're only dealing in nerds.
Yeah.
Or at least if you're dealing in people who know the term roguelike and are trying to sell to them, you're only dealing in nerds.
And
like,
I hate the people who feel the need to correct you if you say rogue light instead of rogue like or vice versa, and they have
those
to,
are different game, genres those are though.
Two different things.
Yeah, but
two
but then
different
they have
things.
To, and they have to explain all of the differences, and it's like, my God, just forget I even said anything.
They are different, though. If you tell someone that something is a roguelite and they get a roguelite, they might have a right to be pissed at you.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
But let's see. I'm going on the list now. But yeah, like it's one of those things. Like that's some strictly for nerds shit. If you're actually talking about it, also Compile Heart making a roguelike sounds like in 2007 sounds like something I should have sent to Wheels to get back at him for his many wrongs against me. let's see. Remember Persona Trinity Soul and the anime adaptation of the PS2 Tower of Draga? Unfortunately, I do. It was a time for anime adaptations that had little to do with the original games. Yeah, I believe Trinity Soul's only connection to Persona 3 is that, which was the only Persona of that style out at the time. Persona 4 had not come out yet. But as I recall, Trinity Soul's only relation to Persona 3 is that an older version of Akihiko appeared in the first episode. It does have some stupendously bad rapping in that was taken from a sound library in one of its in its soundtrack. I hope that everyone hears and appreciates the point where, like, this atmospheric track has a man come in to start off with the bone chilling line, "I'm in the house like carpet."
Okay.
What? I'm in the house like carpet. I'm just going to put this in.
You mean he's stuck to the floor?
Don't worry about it. I'm just going to pull this. I'm just going to pull this shit up for you. Okay. Pull this one up. Here's the YouTube. It's just like a perfectly normal atmospheric song until like a minute in when a dude starts rapping. And then it goes someplace magical. But yeah, I'm putting that in there. Burning Men's Soul from Persona Trinity Soul. For those interested in listening at home, let's see. Yeah, there was definitely a time where, like, the tie-in anime that was creatively liberated from its source material was in vogue. Is there a reason to implement a faith, oath, and blessing system for the paladin class in Final Fantasy? Absolutely not. Like the penalty system in Final Fantasy Tactics. Strategy RPG fans don't like it when you force them to play in a certain way to get a reward. Well, there's that, and there's also just a, like, Final Fantasy calls that class a paladin, but that doesn't mean it needs to function like a D&D paladin, and it never has. So, like, implementing that is mostly just, like, inviting pain upon themselves and the players. So I don't really see much call for it. Like, yeah, it's not what we would initially think of as a paladin. It doesn't match the D&D term. It really doesn't matter. And, yeah, such a class would not be popular with players for the same reason that, like, D&D players have very mixed feelings about paladins, where they are either like the universally reviled imbecile that doesn't know how to fucking keep their oath without acting like an idiot at all times, or someone that like the DM takes great pains to torment at all times by trying to engineer as many situations that will force them to try to fight hard to avoid breaking their oaths. It's a whole deal.
I've once played an Oath of Vengeance paladin because I was told it was like Batman. And he was half drow elf, and I would cut the heads off of every monster we killed.
As one does.
Yeah. But I'm recalling playing Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 when they first came out, and Paladin was like, oh no, you have to be human and you have to be lawful good. And I was like, oh, that's boring.
I'm in the house like carpet. To hit another one. For some reason, I always get bored quickly when playing Diablo-like games. While I can get by with a dungeon crawler a lot longer, I wonder why. It's because Diablo is boring.
Diablo is what I play when I just want to shut my brain off and just kill demons without thinking too hard.
For me, like, if I'm going to use this chance to opine on why I can't play Diablo or its progeny, Diablo is about optimizing in a way that I find singularly uninteresting. Characters that are built are entirely around, like, doing one thing, except you also only have one of them. And, like, the same problem that I have with all loot-based systems, the more loot you throw at me, the less any of it means to me.
Like, yeah.
Give me a handful of, like, items that were crafted to have some sort of meaning, purpose, or lore behind them, and I'll be much happier than another dozen, like, fucking... Like, this is why I can't fucking play Borderlands, this is why I can't play... fucking, it's why I have to like play like Neo in an extremely stupid fashion, because if I engage with that system, it will like spontaneously bore me.
Yeah, actually, you just touched on something. Like, that's why I just don't want to play Diablo 4 anymore, because it's like, okay, I'm maximum level, 95% of the stuff I find is worthless, and I just break it down into materials that can't be used to make anything useful either. It's like, why am I doing this? You know, you're showering me with loot that I'm not ever going to use. I have 300 million gold in my stash that I can't spend on anything. You didn't give me any interesting things to buy with it. You know, and
when numbers go up with no purpose behind it, it forces you to reckon with how shallow the numbers going up is.
Yeah. So either I play on a lower difficulty and everything goes down in one hit and I get worthless loot, or I play on the higher difficulty and it takes longer to kill everything and I still don't get good loot. So you want me to do these two activities over and over again to slightly improve my ancestral unique blibbity blah gear, you know, it's like, it's not fun. And you expect me to do this forever because you're just going to keep adding more paragon levels and more torment difficulty levels. So, like, no, not doing it. I'm done.
Another thread now.
Yeah, play Minecraft Dungeons instead. It's actually much better at all these loot things.
Sure.
Shockingly.
Maybe.
No, it really is. Not a joke.
I've heard you say good things about it. It does look neat. And it's getting a sequel, isn't it?
It is.
Yep, Minecraft Dungeons 2. Okay, I'm going to hit some for real quick, like.
Okay.
A common defense for D&D 4th edition is a lot of people actually took for that game, like, experience from tactical RPGs, and it isn't like a lot of players and GMs are that good to fully utilize the role-playing mechanics 3rd edition provided them. It's interesting to see the yellow paint debate in other mediums. Yeah, I mean, it's also just, like, this was fully a matter of taste. It's just that, like, when you declare something a new edition, like, you have, for, like, a bunch of people are going to come in and declare how they have distaste for the new direction that's been taken, and that's inescapable. Should the keyblades be more upgradable so that the kingdom key will be more useful, like how Final Fantasy VII Remake makes the Buster Sword useful till end game? They already started down that path with 3. That's straight up how 3 functions. I'm convinced that that system was, like, given that those two games were in development concurrently, I'm convinced that the system that was used in Kingdom Hearts 3 and the one that was being made for FF7 Remake were influencing each other while they were being created. But yeah, like, they've already been doing a lot to try to make every, like, it's not fully like every Keyblade is great in 3, but like, you can upgrade them such that you could fairly viably finish the game with every Keyblade without it being like an overt challenge run. So I suspect that's where we will see that go in Kingdom Hearts 4 whenever that finally comes out. And will Sora and company get Keyblade armors in the next game, or will they save it for the grand finale? I don't know, because like, the point of giving it would mostly be an aesthetic choice. Like, it's also like an aesthetic that's like very much tied to the Birth by Sleep characters. So I'm not convinced that they're really going to do it, but who knows? Like, maybe there's something that I haven't been paying attention to because I don't play the goddamn mobile games. But yeah, like, my instinct would be I kind of don't see it, just because it's not really the aesthetic they, like, Nomura typically wants for Sora. So
this is yet another reminder that I own all of the Kingdom Hearts games and have not played them, because I got that PS4 collection and did start a game, and I don't know, I think I picked the shield as my weapon, I don't remember, but I did the prologue. Yeah
that's the prologue of Kingdom Hearts probably 1. Did you have to throw away something else?
Yeah, I think so.
Then yeah, that's Kingdom Hearts 1, that's its prologue. You don't keep that, it ends up determining what order your abilities are granted in.
Yeah.
You get more defensive abilities to start with if you pick the shield, that kind of thing. Let's see, the response for the Kingdom Key in 3 isn't that viable at the end game. Certainly it's not like ideal, but you can do it. And it's not like you're just sitting with its base stats. I suspect we'll continue to see them move in that direction, just because that seems to be the way that Square is looking at how to incorporate iconic aesthetic elements. And remember the PS4 exclusive Keyblade. I think there's also an Epic Game Store exclusive Keyblade and a Steam exclusive one, in case you're, you know, just doing whatever. Sometimes the console exclusive items must be mediocre because you don't want people to complain that you don't give them this really good new toy. Yeah, like, essentially all of those, like, exclusive ones are both generically designed and generically and given generic abilities, because it's just like, whatever, who cares. Honestly, I think that even the Switch Cloud version might also have a fucking, like, exclusive Keyblade. Like, they really did, just once they realized that they were doing that, they just had to do it for every platform, and it was ridiculous. But you know, they've aesthetically and ability wise they're all completely mediocre. You don't want players to feel like they're missing out on something, as much as the console manufacturer desperately wants to give the impression that if you're playing on something else, you're missing out. But there's actually a very interesting interview with Ed Fries not that long ago about trying to coax people into working on the original Xbox way back in the day. Let's see if I can find some of this. Let's see if I can get to the source on this. I want to draw back to the original source on this. Uh,
Okay, yeah. So originally, he was apparently on a podcast, as far as I can tell. Yeah, a podcast called Expansion Pass, it seems like. And he basically was talking about trying to get Japanese developers to support the original Xbox. And at that point, there was, like, at least from his perspective, it was, he thought that there was a, that some of them were reluctant, especially Square Enix, on the basis that they thought that Sony might retaliate. It's an extremely, like, that's bad. It's bad that you, that anyone was in a market position to do that.
Because that sounds like a thing that would happen, actually.
Yeah. But basically, one of those situations where, like, if you made an Xbox game, maybe Sony is less free with developer support or dev kits. It's like, ooh, yep, that's bad. There was never a day, there was never a period, there was never a period of wine and roses. Let's see. Oh yeah, have you guys talked about the Blue Reflection Quartet collection that has everything? I have seen it. I don't care about Blue Reflection personally that much. I know some people that do. It's uncompelling to me. But maybe I'll look at that collection just because it does have everything. I think they even turned a mobile game into an actual game.
They did.
Which is,
and it has some anime on there too, maybe? And you can get it on a Switch cart.
Yeah. But yeah, like, as Fireminer points out, it seems like a lot of it is sort of experimenting for potential future Atelier games, but it's one of those situations where, like, I just find it aesthetically kind of repellent. But, which is why I've never cared for it, never bothered. Ultimately, I might try Quartet just again because I'm impressed by the amount of effort into just like trying to make it all of them. God, that's a fucking ugly game. Jesus. I'm sorry. It's trying to do. It was like it's late tens, like trying to sort of do like anime look, and it ends up settling on like unsettling doll people in a way that I just find absolutely hideous. Let's see, what's the actual reason the GameCube used mini mini DVDs, not mini CDs, instead of DVDs again? I believe, like, of course Nintendo would never go on the record, and the answer is actually probably a few different things. The most obvious one was harder to burn a mini DVD than a regular DVD. Mini DVD burners are not dealable, like are not usable. Technically, they don't abide by the mini DVD standard, but you know, obviously, like a mini DVD burner would theoretically be able to burn GameCube games. Good luck finding such a thing. I'm sure that figured into their thought process a lot. The other one was, and the one that they were more public about was loading times. It's just like, as silly as it sounds, a smaller disc means less like disc, like seeking time.
Yeah.
Like that was definitely a part of it. GameCube loading times tended to be quite small for that and a number of other reasons, but like I'm sure that like the most altruistic version of what they were doing was it just makes the load times faster. Of course, it came with its own problems. Like, part of the reason that the seek times were smaller was that there just was less data to seek, and that meant that games would often have to be on two GameCube discs that were on, or have things like cut from them in order to make them fit on a GameCube disc if multi-disc was not a feasible option. But yeah, like load times were probably a not insubstantial part of that as well.
Was Resident Evil 4 on two discs, or is that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Resident Evil 0 was as well.
Yeah, Resident Evil 1 Remake, 0, and 4 were all two discs.
Jeez.
Let's see. Got very used to seeing those. Let's see. You know, you should have been able to just put a GameCube disc in the Wii's disc slot instead of the weird opening thing. I'm not recalling. Like, you could just put a GameCube disc in the Wii slot. Like, if you wanted to use the controller, you had to pop the opening out. But I seem to recall just being able to put a GameCube disc in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see. Japanese Twitter are now talking about the reason that Mario Sunshine and other 3D games at the time were so obsessed with Okinawa came down to wanting to showcase their water physics. That was a big deal at the time, was like good-looking water was a big thing. Like one of those, it's sort of like how lighting is constantly being chased, like good water is constantly being chased, but was especially prominent at the time because like accurate, like semi-accurate, like realistic looking water physics simulations were now possible. I mean, like they'd also just called the system Dolphin. So a tropical setting kind of made sense. Like, it's even still in the name. It's Isle Delfino. Like, it's, if you look at the in-game world map, it's shaped like a dolphin. Like, they were just really like tons of GameCube games, actually, like from Nintendo, try to reference dolphins in one fashion or another. I mean, like Captain Olimar's ship is the dolphin.
Oh yeah.
Like, they just loved referencing that code name for one reason or another. But yeah, I think that that caused the tropical setting as much as anything. See, so Twin Snakes an example of a good director not necessarily understanding their own work? I mean, Kojima's not a director on Twin Snakes. What is his actual role on the Twin Snakes? Like, we're talking about his insistence that Ryuhei Kitamura do the cutscene direction. I would say that's him understanding his own work much better than fans do. The much reviled cutscenes for Twin Snakes produce a much, like, yeah, it's silly, but it's fun. Let's see. Okay, so we get a bunch of stuff that is, like, I'm looking at Kojima's list of actual credits on the Twin Snakes. Original story, yeah. Planning, yeah. Game design, yeah. These are all credits that he's getting because it's a remake of a game that he was intimately involved with. Written by, again, original script in Japanese, untouched. Setting research / justification, untouched. Conceptual map, untouched. Like, this is, yeah, all of his, yeah, game design and executive supervisor and producer are his only, like, are his, like, biggest credits on this. And they're mostly just he was overseeing the video game. So I don't think that really counts. It really seems like we're mostly looking at a lot of his credit here is, well, he was the main guy on the original game. But yeah, if we're looking at like his bringing in Ryuhei Kitamura, I think that like it's a like that's a mark of Kojima taking Metal Gear less seriously than a lot of people, up to and including people who would eventually complain that he was taking it too seriously. Kitamura brings a very like over the top sense of action to the direction that at least gives the game some sort of reason to exist, where so much of the rest of it is slavish imitation with ill-fitting elements of Metal Gear Solid 2 grafted onto a game design that doesn't understand how to use them. But Kitamura's cutscenes, for good and ill, are at least stylistically unmistakable. I would disagree with that assertion. I would hold that the problem of Twin Snakes existed because Nintendo was seeking out franchises that they had not had on the previous platform, and so they weren't going to get Metal Gear Solid 2, but a remake of one, which, you know, people who had an N64 and not a PlayStation would not have had access to, that made sense.
That was me.
It was you. But yeah, as these things go, it's definitely a remake that I'm not terribly sad that we don't that we haven't seen come back. I don't think much of it, but honestly, when I'm thinking of it, like, again, the Kitamura cutscenes, which are the biggest difference for most contexts, are at least distinct and are befitting Metal Gear's and are befitting of Metal Gear's frequently over the top stylings. Let's see. Is the gunner class in fantasy Japanese RPG distinctive enough? Low damage, but being safe to play isn't that distinctive. I mean, you know, it's all in how you do it. Like, you can produce some very strange takes on gunners if you care. Just because, like, what I would say is less of a problem, or is more of an indicator that they're not super distinctive, is that I've never seen like two games that seem to agree on what a gunner does. They're a long range fighter, yeah, but other than that, are like, if you asked me to conjure up what are the key ingredients of a gunner, I wouldn't be able to tell you. And like that's much more of a problem for that as a class type than long range and safe keep away style. Like, I'm sure I've played games that do that. I've seen ones that use them as like debuffers. I've seen games that use them as like a sort of like support DPS. Like, there's definitely options. It's just that, like, I would say they're indistinct because there was never like a design for what a player should expect them to be never coalesced among all the games. Wow, you just completely wasted that. But yeah, that would be my thought. It's just like, it's indistinct because I've never seen a game that really stood up and like defined what Gunner would be in anything but its own gameplay. If the game doesn't have a back row system, a gunslinger makes less sense, but is there a place for a row system when late game bosses deal so much damage that it doesn't matter where the character is put? I mean, that's already kind of a failure of balance because now you're at Rocket Tag gameplay. If you're at the point where like defensive measures are essentially worthless, I would say that you've already fucked up somehow. Let's see. So easy to break a game with Arithmetician and other buff focusing classes, but if you balance your game around buffing yourself instead of debuffing the bosses, those classes are inevitable. Yeah, I mean, like, certain classes are going to just be favored by certain design philosophies. That's inescapable. I think. And there's also like perfect balance is often undesirable. It's worthwhile to have some classes that are just really good. Like players like those. It's always memorable. You don't want them to be so, you don't want to design challenges for them because you don't want them to be so good, like the game to be hard enough and those to be the only things that can like counterbalance it. But like having something that like is just stupid strong in a single player game is fun. People like that.
Yes.
You just kind of have to roll with it.
Yeah, I don't understand like balancing patches for single player. Of course you have to do it for like for PvP, everybody's got to be on the same page. But I remember like Elden Ring got some kind of update that nerfed certain weapons and spells in single player.
A single player game.
Well, yeah, but that
unfortunately.
I know what point you're trying to make, but that is fundamentally not a single player game. And I don't think they've designed it in such a way that they could nerf it if you're connected to the internet or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure that's technically unfeasible, but yeah.
And I understand how that's like a problem, and there's lots of people I'm sure that don't engage with the multiplayer at all. But at its base design, that is not a single player game.
Yeah, well, that was a bad example, even but yes, yeah, like,
even though like probably 90% of players will play it with only even though probably 90% of its player base is only playing it with incidental multiplayer interaction.
Yeah. I just have always hated the whole invasion system. Yeah.
That is the thing that you kind of box yourself into when you produce something that has multiplayer almost incidentally, but which is inextricably linked to the single player. It's the same way that like part of the reason that like people complain that Pokemon is easy is because if they didn't make it easy, then they would have to fuck up the multiplayer balance because they would have to produce monsters that were just like, so they would have to produce monsters that could meet the challenge that the weaker monsters couldn't. You would have to start producing unbalances to deal with it. There are many reasons to make a game easy, and that's and even beyond just your primary demographic is 8-year-olds. But yeah, like certain things just end up doing that. It's frustrating.
But Pokemon games can get tricky in the late game when, you know, you have better enemy trainers who actually exploit weaknesses. And Pokemon Legends EA, not a difficult game, but I happen to like poison types and steel types and I was constantly getting one-shotted because, like, every trainer in that game, almost every Pokemon seemed to know Earthquake, and I just kept getting one-shotted. I like Poison, I like Fire, I like Steel. I'm like, wait a minute, my whole team's weak to Ground. That's why they're all dying to Earthquake in one hit. Oh, boy.
Such a miserably powerful attack.
It's like Gengar's a ghost type. He's great against Psychic. Well, no, he's also a Poison type. I always forget that. I'm like, damn it. Yeah.
Okay, another quick one. What do you think about the idea that to force players to try out every monster they capture, the monster should not be able to be empowered in a significant way? Nocturne was the first SMT game that you can level up and evolve the demons, correct? That is my understanding. Prior to, it's been a minute since I've played any significant amount of SMT 1 or 2, but to my recall, the demon you get is the demon you get, and in order to power it up, you need to fuse it away. Now, personally, like it's one of those things. Like you're going for a different philosophy. Pokemon and its ilk, they want you to care about the monster. So, telling you that, well, the monster is the monster, and you're just going to have to live with the fact that it sucks, and you're going to have to like kick it off the team. In one way or another, like that is a design that is at cross purposes with the idea of you caring about your monsters. So you don't do that. Personally, I tend to find like, so here's the push pull that I was kind of getting at earlier.
the more that you tell players, well, you have to use everything, you actually end up being very limiting on the amount of playstyles that work. So, like, if I have to use everything, then it means that the game is hard enough and designed enough that there aren't a lot of options for how to beat it in ways that are, like, possible for a normal human being. And at that point, like, you've kind of stepped away from producing an RPG where I get to, like, have, you know, where I can just sort of work with what I've got, and into, like, producing a very elaborately designed puzzle box. And you see this, like, there's certain things where this is just frustrating. Like, it's one, like, I like Final Fantasy III, but its take on the class system is frustrating because it's rigid. It expects you to use every class, but it expects you to use them in really specific places. Like, well, this is the dungeon we built to make scholars viable. This is the dungeon we built to make, like, there are certain classes that, like, are good all-arounders, but, like, you know, then you're going to have to change everyone to a dragoon for this one specific boss fight, or else you're going to get your ass beat. And that's what it is. Like, the push-pull of build variety versus use all of your tools. To have build variety, there have to be tools that you can leave on the table. Let's see. How much attachment do people have to specific Pokemon or Digimon to the point that they refuse to play other monsters? Have you seen that people, like, I will answer this with, Pokemon Home exists. The point of Pokemon Home is to carry that bit of Pokemon data from game to game to game.
Yes.
That is, they, and you have to pay monthly for the storage to keep it. That is a, that is the degree of attachment that people have. With Digimon, at least, a Digimon has so many different options to evolve into that it makes sense to raise several copies of the same Digimon. Also, not the least, like, depending upon what Digimon game you're playing, it might also just arbitrarily die because it's still kind of a Tamagotchi under the hood. So there's no escaping that, like, origin, like, Digimon are more impermanent than Pokemon. There was never a condition where a Pokemon would be forcibly pulled from your party in the original Pokemon, and so player attachment builds very easily because you are 8 and that little rat is your pet now. And so, you know, Pokemon ends up, like, and then you watch the anime, and the anime is about how, like, being friends with your Pokemon is the path to ultimate success. Literally, the moral of the original Pokemon is about how treating your Pokemon like they aren't living beings is immoral. Like, that is the lesson that...
That's Gold and, like, Silver, yeah.
Well, no, it's also Red and Blue.
Oh, okay.
Like, Blue's thing, Blue, Gary, whatever you want to call him, his thing is... That Pokemon was weak, so I got rid of it. Like, he is treating his Pokemon like they are machines to help him win battles.
Okay, yeah, because I was thinking of the rival in Gold and Silver, but it's the same concept there. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they're both assholes who treat Pokemon like tools instead of, like, living creatures. And
yeah.
And, like, so that is ultimately the philosophy that Pokemon took, was... The Pokemon are living creatures. You need to be loyal to them because they'd be loyal to you.
Yeah. So to that, I would say, I remember when the card game, I remember when the Team Rocket set came out and you had your Team Rocket versions of certain Pokemon. It was like, oh, Rocket, so
Charizard and shit.
Yeah. So the reasoning behind it was, well, Team Rocket treats their Pokemon like garbage. Then they become as evil as their owners. But I always thought it was neat, though, in the anime series, there's the episode where something happens and the humans get trapped in one place and their Pokemon get trapped somewhere else. So you've got Pikachu, Squirtle, you know,
Bulbasaur and all those, Arbok, yeah. And Koff, and Weezing, yeah. Or I think it was Ash and Koffing.
Yeah. So Koffing and Weezing are getting mixed up with Ash's Pokemon, but what I find interesting is, though, is that coughing is like, where's Master? And then Ekans, too, is like, yeah, where's Master? And it's like, well, wait a minute. Jesse and James actually did care about their Pokemon, didn't they? And their Pokemon did reciprocate that. I always thought that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is not. Yeah. As much as they will comedically like berate them, like they like their Pokemon and their Pokemon like them.
So I remember the episode where they successfully kidnapped Togepi and brought it to Giovanni, and he's like, "The fuck is this?" It's like, "Oh, it's incredibly rare, sir." Yeah, but what does it do? Like what? You guys suck. Get me something. Get me a good Pokemon. Steal a good one for me. Not this shit. Yeah.
Let's see. Neptunia people actually made a Toho game. Strange when established dev jumps into a space mostly occupied by hobbyist devs. That is, like, Neptunia dev makes Toho game is one of the evilest sentences I've ever heard.
What Toho
game? I hate it with all my heart. I don't know, and I don't want it. I don't want it. It feels like an idea made to repel me from, like, the concept of video games. Yeah, I can't interface with this question without being an asshole, so I won't.
I think he knows what game. I think I know what game he's talking about. That game's actually it's a Sting game.
Ah, that explains it. That explains why someone might enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
There's a.
Can someone hire Sting to make, like, just something cool? Like, because they.
Something that doesn't make me feel like dying.
They like, have to make interesting games from, like, crap. Can they, like, can someone with a cool property hire Sting, please? Please, thank you.
Sting. Super Sting. The world cries out for Super Sting. Wheels cries out for Super Sting.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not the person to ask about Toho things. I find the like general Toho aesthetic to be like dollar store anime. Like, just the most. Like, I found it in the bargain bin. Just restart Department Heaven again. You already have Riviera and Ikra Union on modern platforms. Yeah, seriously. I'd love to see a new Department Heaven game that is just a deranged and debauched combination of, like, weird genres, like Knights in the Nightmare or something.
Hey, they already experimented with some of that in that said Toho game. We're ready. The world is ready for Knights in the Nightmare too. We're not, but
someone must be.
No one is ready for that. I like that game. I still don't understand what's going on in it.
Well, maybe you should go into the Nightmare.
No.
You'll never be in the Nightmare now. Okay.
It's on the creator too, who isn't a great artist. Then how did this series become popular?
Because people could make it their own. The answer with many of these things is that it's more popular for... it's more popular, like... If you look at any given Toho, like, the thing that, like, the amount of dialogue that any given Toho character has is probably, like, a couple of paragraphs. And the rest is an accretion of fan response to that design. And, like, that's why I can't get into it. I don't, like, I just don't gel with that kind of, like, fan consensus building to determine what a character is, and they're all just like the same generic girls in different hats. I can't do it, man. I can't do it.
Yes, the Zun drawings looking weird is definitely an intentional part of the charm, which probably doesn't help that like those Zun drawings are the first things to go when another game comes out. Because if you're doing your like official fan game, someone else has to draw them. But yeah, I don't know. They're, it's not for me. I don't get the appeal in the slightest. I can understand it on an intellectual level. I understand how the sense of ownership that fans have over the property has a significant impact on how it's perceived. I find every piece of Toho writing I have ever seen to be indescribably tedious.
I mean, the only interaction I've had with this series is, oh, hey, they made a store brand version of some other series I like, and I usually ignore the stories completely.
So, like the way I would describe it is that like there are a ton of talented indie developers who end up making Toho games, especially Japanese ones, because it allows them to like slap a interesting design onto a pre-existing like aesthetic and art like concept that will have instant recognizability and sellability. And you know, those people are probably authentic fans of Toho. I'm not going to pretend that they aren't, but to me, so there was an old joke that Sean Baby used to make about like reviewing like shitty Christian knockoffs of things, where he would say like Christian anything is worse than regular anything. Like to me that's Toho. Like Toho anything is worse than regular anything. But yeah, I'm gonna stop ranting because I'm just gonna be mean. And there's no point in that. The non-joke of the Toho and Kantai collection Tokenranbu fandom is that very few people have actually played the original game and instead mainly engaged with fan comics and fan games. That's why Umamusume fans tolerate the gacha game because they think side games use the profits from the gacha game to make really good anime and manga. Yeah, about that, the Umamusume anime studio is like fucking deep in debt and probably gonna go out of business. But yeah, we should probably end this before I get saltier and meaner. So
yeah.
Oh, and I've been playing some Guilty Gear Strive while we're talking. I misspoke before. So there are two characters who have three chapters in arcade mode now, but the rest of them do not, which is okay. Mm-hmm. So like when I picked Jam, cause she's the newest character, it's like, oh, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. I'm like, oh, okay. So I do chapter one, then it unlocks chapter two. And I thought, oh, every character has that, right? No, her and Lucy have that. I haven't found her.
Genuinely baffling.
Okay. I'm going to do a bit of a plug speed run because Gaijin, our dear... normal indie author has many irons in the fire, and I want to hit at least the majority of them. So, you have
where'd you go? Hello?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I'm back. How long ago did I drop?
Like 2 to 3 minutes. You right before starting the plugs.
Jesus fuck. Yeah. Okay.
Double speed run, double time.
It wasn't me. Okay.
No, it was. It looked like a Discord hiccup of some kind.
Okay, shut the fuck up. Double speed run, double time. Okay, so you have the old classic, old reliable. All of this is available on this and the following. Several are under the pen name Michael Yarimizu, Y-A-R-I-M-I-Z-U. You will find them on Amazon. Some of them are in a dead tree format, but all of them are Kindle or Kindle Unlimited. You have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, nearing its conclusion, almost the length of War and Peace when taken in totality. Plenty of reading. If you enjoy like the notion of the social dynamics of a D&D game, if you enjoy like watching dice rolls fuck someone over, and if you just want a nice piece of light young adult literature, there's your option. That's a good one. You have Tanuki as a Teapot if you're more of a folklore culture kind of person. These are Japanese folk tales that have been retold once again by our very own indie author friend. Some of these basically don't have any other extant English versions, so you know, you're bound to learn something if you don't speak much Japanese. You also have Vainglorious Long as the Night, which is a Litroidvania. I'm still too scared to figure out what that means, but I need to read it at some point. it's definitely, there's definitely a lot less of it than lit RPGs, so I'll put it that way. If you are moving into deeper water and more adult takes, you have some work under the pen name Michael Spearwater, which I believe the most recent is Sin of Tantalus. That's either most recently come out or soon to come out. But yeah. I believe the other one was Wager for Wanderlust. I know that one is definitely already out. So if those are more your things, romanticy sort of stuff, that might be more your jam. Definitely not definitely not for the younger ones, though. So give those a look. If you figure out something you like, there's a fair bit. If you like any kind of fantasy, there's bound to be something there for you. Joe, where can they find you?
Okay, so I'm still doing my Tuesday and Thursday night streams for RP Gamer. I'm just doing 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. both nights. That's Eastern Standard Time. So still playing East 10 Proud Nordics, making significant progress. I actually did a whole bunch of side quests, and now I'm not struggling as much. So I think that's why it seemed like a lot of bosses had a bajillion hit points. It was because I just wasn't shelling out enough damage. I just hadn't done the required level grinding. It is a JRPG after all. So I'm still playing that. And lately I've been playing a lot of vintage games. I did just roll credits on Pokemon Pokapia, so that's good. I've been playing some Guilty Gear Strive, and I did get back into Final Fantasy XIV, still trying to clear some Stormblood content to get to Shadowbringers. I've been somewhat active on my YouTube channel. I actually had done a whole video. It's an hour long. I don't know if it would appeal to, well, anybody, but I was looking through my trophy list on the PS5. I went all the way back to the beginning, and I'm seeing all these PS3 games that were among the first to get trophy support. So I basically go through the whole list and just talk about various games in that list that I enjoyed. And I don't know, just a whole video just about memories of playing the PS3, the Vita when they first came out, and just looking at trophy data and saying, oh, wow, I got this in 2009. Oh, who would have thought? That's amazing. That sort of thing. And then, you know, at the start of the podcast, I was talking about what I did with my NES mini console. So I just did a very short clip where, I don't know, just a quick video showing people what I did, you know, just turning the NES mini console into a Super NES mini console. And I don't know, maybe that'll be entertaining for some people, and we'll see. But yeah, so got about, I think I have almost 500 YouTube videos you can check out from the past several years. I don't know what's next, because every year I've been doing Metroidvania, so I'm debating which games I would want to play, but I still have time to sort that out, because it's only middle of April right now. So, yeah, so stay tuned on the Smoke and Joe Gamer play YouTube channel.
Shadow Labyrinth.
Maybe.
Do it, coward. Coward.
We'll see. Maybe I'll think about it. That's actually not a terrible suggestion because it is a Metroidvania. Yeah, I think that's it. Because you can also follow me on Blue Sky and Instagram under Smoke and Joe Gamer. And of course, you can join the RP Gamer Discord server, and I am somewhat chatty on there when I feel like it.
So. Yeah, you can also ask us questions there in the podcast section, like dear friend Fireminer did.
That's correct.
You can also ask us questions if you catch us when we stream, which is at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern on Mondays. For the time being, it may be shifting in order to accommodate Gaijin Monogatari, who was not able to be here today.
Also, we also should play One Piece Pirate Warriors 4, random plug.
I want to hit you in the head with a baseball.
Runs great. Game is amazing.
Wheels, you better be getting paid for this, and if you are, you better be splitting it with me. But yeah, so you know, catch us then. We also have our sister show Shenanigans, which is typically at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Sundays. That's not likely to change. Last night, these two played Marvel Rivals while I finished a sub 3 hour run of Resident Evil Remake, so that was fun.
And I decided I don't want to play Marvel Rivals anymore. I want to check out all the new characters that came out for the past few months. And, you know, I just have to admit these types of games just aren't for me. You know,
the characters also kind of sucked.
Yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, so that's our story and we're sticking to it. So I would suggest that I will have to see you, Space Cowboy.
See you.
Good night.
What? No, soundboard. Soundboard.
Mole this man. Is Mole Man. This good is Mole Man to you. Good Mole Man to you.
Oh my god, the double Mole Man.
Yeah, what the hell was that? You both hit it at the same time?
Resident Evil. Yeah. God, I hate you both. Okay, that's enough of that. Yeah. See ya.
Yeah. You know what?
This is boring.
Okay, I'm going to bed now.